We're accustomed to their voices on the radio, breaking the news hours before the daily newspaper or the 6 o'clock TV report. They're local radio reporters, the hard-charging folks we turn to in the middle of the morning or late at night or when we're in our cars, bringing us stories that other media don't have yet. In Kansas City these days, the hard news radio reporter is a dwindling breed. I'm Monroe Dodd, and on today's Central Standard, we'll talk with Dan Verbeck, who's retiring from radio reporting after four decades of bringing Kansas City the news. Also today, we'll look at the inventors of Kansas City and at the state of that art, inventing. That's all ahead on Central Standard after the news. Good morning and welcome to Central Standard. I'm Monroe Dodd. For decades, we heard their voices telling us about some big event hours before the daily newspaper could print the story or before TV got around to its 6 p.m. or 10 p.m. news shows. Those voices came to us over AM radio in telegraphic and dramatic reports about this explosion or that tornado, this fire or that murder right here in Metro Kansas City. Those voices are something of a dwindling breed these days. You'll remember the name and probably the voice of one of Kansas City's most active and wide-ranging radio reporters, Dan Verbeck. After four decades of bringing us on-the-spot reports, he's retiring to his acreage north of the river. But before Dan's all the way out the door, we have him today on Central Standard to share his experiences, remember some of the big stories, and recall the late 20th century history of Kansas City. Dan Verbeck, welcome to Central Standard.
Well, Monroe, it's a real delight to sit here, and it's odd to be sitting in the interviewee's seat because, you know, being reporters, as you and I are, you're used to being on the other side and asking the question. So I'll be as frank with you as I can be, within reasons.
Well, we'll try to avoid discomfort in today.
Thank you.
Now, later in today's program, we'll look into the inventive Kansas City, the place where inventors and inventions have incubated. But first, we'll talk to the man who made Cruiser 980, a catchphrase for radio news reporting. Dan Verbeck, I got to ask you, where did that phrase come from?
I do get asked that, and it's there was a news director over at KMBZ who said, here's what we're going to do. We're going to make this your out cue, and he said what it was, and it was. I said, you can't do that. It sounds like Walter Winchell. Now, for our younger listeners who've never heard of Walter Winchell, he was a kind of a hyped up guy, did this staccato telegraph kind of a style of stuff from back in the 50s and probably the 40s. And I said, you can't do that. It's hokey. And he said, you're right. People will remember it. Well, they did it. And for some reason, it caught on. And Cruiser 980 clear was I still get it today. I haven't quite figured it out. But it is odd and it's memorable, I guess.
Now, when I heard you say those words, I envisioned a massive car all painted with the radio station's moniker and sirens and other things like that.
That was part of it, but it was a always dirty Chevy Impala that was missing a couple of hubcaps. I'm sorry, wheel covers for the younger set. And It had a lot of dings on it, and I got 270,000 miles out of it. It was packed with radio equipment, scanners and the like, so you could hear what was going on around you. And it wasn't very comfortable. He always had a couple of extra sets of boots in the trunk and some flashlights and a shovel and necessary stuff for being out on the streets all the time.
So here at the end of your reporting career, I got to ask you, how did you get into this crazy line of work?
You know, I like to write short stories as a high school student, and somebody said, well, what would you like to do? And I said, I'd like to be able to just do this. And it turns out that a 40-second story in radio is kind of a real short story, and I wound up, I started off in newspaper up in Chicago as a kid. There were a couple of them. One was on its third bankruptcy, and I was the reporter and the photographer, tiny. And I worked for a couple of papers, and then fairly decent paper, twice a week job, and that worked out pretty well. And then my draft notice was coming up. My number was right up there, and it was 1965, and Vietnam was heating up. So I enlisted, and the Army major that I worked for sent me to a school to learn to do some broadcast, and did me a great favor because he provided me with the wherewithal to pay the mortgage and get five kids through school. And
well, the Army wasn't always famous in those days for matching talents to particular jobs, was it?
No. If you were a surgeon, you became a truck driver was the standard line. But it happened to work for me. You know, I worked at a paper. They looked at the paperwork and they said, "Hey, we need somebody to do this, and here's a guy that might be able to do it. So we'll tag him to do it."
I think I know the answer to this question, but were you happy to have been assigned to that that task in the Army?
Yeah. A lot of my friends from basic training were infantrymen, and you know what happened to them.
So when you came to Kansas City in 74, was it?
Mm-hmm.
And you fetched up with KMBZ.
KMBZ.
KMBZ, yeah. Mm-hmm. All News. How many reporters were there at KMBZ at the time?
Oh, at the time, I think there were about three or four. Some guys. One went on to Channel 9 and became a great sports guy, Don Fortune.
Mm-hmm.
There were three or four. And I had come from shops where there were two or one. I mean, my first station was in Atchison, Kansas, where I'd gone when I'd gotten out of the Army and I'd gone back to college. I said, I'm walked in half-heartedly thinking, you know, maybe I could get a job. I said, I'm looking for work and I'm going to school. I don't know too much about this. And they said, well, we had an opening. When can you start? And it turned out that the reason they had a job was that the man that I replaced died on the air. Literally, I dropped dead in the middle of a newscast. And so that was how I got into this business.
And you got good at it by learning by doing, I take it.
I guess that was it. It was on a job training. You just kind of figured it out. You figured your own style. You knew the basics. You knew what to do and what not to do. Just get everything accurate. Number one, number two, and number three, get it accurate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, from first to last. Now, we have some clips of Dan's radio reports over the years, and in my time in Kansas City, certainly the most catastrophic event was the collapse of the Hyatt Skywalks.
Sure was.
It's Friday evening, July 17th, 1981. Dan, can you set the scene for this audio clip at the Hyatt Regency Hotel?
The newsroom at KCMO is winding down for the day. It's a 24-hour operation, so somebody had to be there all the time, and there's always a couple of reporters around. I just happened to be, I think, the only one there at the time, and somebody called and said something has happened down at the Hyatt Regency, and we don't know what, but it doesn't sound good. And turned up the police and fire scanners that were on in the newsroom, and I heard if you listen to the scanners for a lot of time, you get to listen for nuance. A dispatcher's voice is betraying something that is more than they're saying. And so I got in the car and I got an I-35. It was close. It was 7-8 minutes from where the station was. And as I was going down I-35 and crossing state line at about Cambridge Circle, several ambulances from Johnson County MedAct passed me going into Missouri. And I'd never seen that before. And that said something really bad has happened. And so I got over there and got inside. It was before they blocked things off, and I got inside and began reporting on what was there.
So let's listen now to Dan Verbeck's reports from that awful night, the night of Kansas City's biggest disaster.
The main problem is that it's in a lobby of a hotel, and it's hard to get a big piece of equipment in there. They brought some forklifts in, and there was one forklift, and they've been bringing another one in. It's hard to lift up something that is crumbling as you lift it, and that's exactly what this is doing. Whatever type of material it's made of has been damaged as it fell, and it tends to fall apart. The people that are caught underneath They don't want anything else to fall on them. So they're going about it very gingerly and with all speed possible. There's only one skywalk that remains, and it seems steady enough because I walked across it three or four times. But the problem right now is the water that's in there, ankle deep in places, and they're worried, I'm sure, about the people who are trapped underneath. And ankle deep water, when you're lying face down, can be very difficult to handle. So obviously, some were able to get out of the way when they heard the sound of it falling. I talked to one gentleman who had it strike him in the back and knocked him over into the center of the lobby. So obviously, some people were lucky, but others were not, and some people were trapped and are trapped right now. It's in a case like this where you see the real goodness of people, because mere passersby, some of the lowest paid employees of the hotel were out there helping people, and they weren't caring whether they got blood on their clothes or not. They were just doing whatever they could to comfort the victims.
That's Dan Verbeck reporting live from the Hyatt Hotel that night in 1981 that the skywalks collapsed on a crowd of partygoers attending one of the regular Friday night tea dances. More than 100 people died in that.
Dan, 114.
114. Dan, reporters have to do their jobs, and they have to sound professional and detached and all. But how did that disaster affect you that night?
At the time or later?
Just that very night.
Well, it became really obvious as you were seeing and smelling and hearing people who were in the extremes of what we're going to all wind up at. And you realize that there were certain things you could not describe, and there would be no real purpose for describing the horrors of it. You figured people might be able to pick up on from your voice, but that wasn't in the mind at the time. Only on listening back to it later do I realize that that was there. And so you couldn't describe some things, but what was important was this rescue and how they were going to try to retrieve people who were dead under it and people who were still alive. And so that was the story. And so many ordinary people had an opportunity to do something they would probably never do in their lives that night. And these were ordinary Kansas Cityans, some professionals and some working class folks. There were iron workers who were brought in from one of the construction companies, and they were shoring up material and lifting, and they were in there with the emergency workers and the doctors, the paramedics. At one point, I realized, and listening later to the sounds of what was on the, I'd inadvertently left the tape recorder running that was slung over my shoulder, and so I had all this, the sounds of rushing water, the sounds of screams and cries, and as things that you could never use on the air, I never have. And you began to realize that these people were doing, there's a sound of a chainsaw at one point in there, and I realized that was when Dr. Joe Wackerly, the emergency physician, had climbed down with the help of emergency folks, and the only way to get to save somebody who was terribly trapped under there was to do an amputation with it, and they morphined them up and got them out. So those kinds of things, at the time, you served no you couldn't talk about that. So you talked about the rescue. You talked about the nuts and bolts of freeing people, and at one point the mayor came through with his wife, and they'd obviously come from some function. The mayor's wife was a fashion plate, probably still is, and they came in and they went down to the room where they were taking the living and the dead and doing triage down there, he was ashen-faced and she was queasy, but they stayed. And that epitomized what people did that night, that they sometimes didn't have to, but they did because it was the right thing. And Kansas City shone that night like it has maybe not to this day, maybe never will again. It was the world's or the country's worst manufactured, if you will, disaster by human error
and Kansas City's possibly its finest hour. And later, you mentioned, when you look back at that in the weeks and the years afterward, what kind of feelings do you get?
Well, if somebody's a reporter, I would recommend to them to stuff their pride, and if they offer you some mental health assistance, emotional balm afterward, go ahead and take it. I started having nightmares some weeks later, and the sweats, and things that you saw and didn't talk about, surfaced to varying degrees. And I wasn't unusual. I'm sure that there were many, many others that were doing exactly the same thing.
You're listening to Central Standard on KCUR. I'm Monroe Dodd, here with longtime radio reporter Dan Verbeck. Dan, with so many news stories, reporters get to the scene after the event. No one can be everywhere at once, after all. But in May 2003, at the beginning of the tornado season, you are on the scene when news was breaking. Tell us about the events of that day and about the clip we're about to hear.
Yeah, that was the clip in which my wife told me a little bit afterward that she was driving when she had the radio on and she heard this, and she was convinced at that time that she was going to hear herself become a widow on the air. There was an outbreak of tornadoes coming out of the southwest. There were a series of several. There was the big one went through Kansas City, Kansas, over 435 at about Leavenworth Road, hit some houses on the west side. On the east side, it went in a swath. It was wide. I can't remember how wide. It was hundreds of feet wide. It went through neighborhoods, and it hopscotched over through Riverside into the Missouri side and then up into the northeast side of Clay County. And hit a bunch of houses up there. It did a tremendous amount of damage. But just before that, I think probably maybe 2 hours, there were a couple of other smaller tornadoes that went out of Leavenworth and up. And I live up in Platte County, so it was quick to me to get to. I had this car that you so well asked about, but it had a lot of radio equipment in it, and I was driving, and I was listening to the tornado spotters, and I realized where they were, and I thought I could get where they are, and I'll be able to see what they see. So I was between Leavenworth and Platte City, and driving, and drove. Well, it went over me or I went under it, but it was up, 100 feet or so into the air. But it was an experience, and I thought, please don't let me say what I think I'm going to say or it'll cost me my job.
Let's go then to this clip of Dan Verbeck reporting from the underside of a tornado.
Dan, are you there?
Don, I am, and I am looking at the location right now. In fact, it's about a quarter of a mile. I'm almost right underneath it. I'm on Highway 92. About 2 miles northwest of Leavenworth, the spotters from the South Platte County Fire are out, and they've been talking about it. I'm looking right up, almost right into it. There is rotation. It's about 200 feet off the ground. Highway 92 just about a mile to the north. Wow. Almost. It's. I've got to pull off the road. It is blowing. It is. This is incredible. It's boiling. 92 and a half. I'm looking at the roof of a barn blew off just to the west of me. We're on 92 Highway, a mile to the north and west, mostly west of Platte City, and it's blowing over right now. It's going to be in the south part of Platte City in about a minute. If you're in Platte City, you need to take cover. Okay, it'll be right in Tracy right about now. It's black. I'm looking back toward Tracy now as it boils over. I'm directly underneath, and here is more. It's, wait a minute. Okay, just to the north, it is right here. I'm gonna get out of this a little bit. This is the force of these winds. Is just amazing. They've got to be blowing close to 100 miles an hour. If you're in Platte City, by all means,
take cover now if you're in Tracy. Take cover now. There's things are blowing. I can't even tell what they are. They're blowing so hard. And
lest we have a War of the Worlds moment to our listeners, that was happening 11 years ago, not right now.
Not right now.
That was longtime Kansas City radio reporter Dan Verbeck telling about a tornado in the act of being a tornado. Now, Dan, to me, it's a wonder that you could even keep talking in those frightening minutes. How do you do it?
Well, I didn't do a very good job. I mean, I was all over the place. I think the important thing was to tell people that here it is, and if you're in this area to go to cover, I think the immediacy of it was probably pronounced enough that people. If they were listening, we would know. It was right after a Royals game, and there were a lot of people who were listening for an after-game show, and that was, well, it wasn't an after-game show. It was a different kind of play-by-play, I guess. But the important thing was to let people know. I mean, that's what radio does best, is tells people, what's really important to them. And in that particular case, I think that was the most important thing to people in that part of Platte County and other parts of the metro area where it would continue on and other tornadoes would be even more damage.
Radio has an immediacy, and it also still – we're not talking fictional or radio soap operas here. We're talking about real life. It also fires the imagination more than other media, even current media, do.
Well, there is some power of word that radio. I think radio. I've said this before. It engages the listener, whereas television, you don't have to take part too much. I mean, it's all kind of laid out right there. But radio, you get to use your mind and your own sense of descriptive powers to yourself. Just letting the radio translate what's coming from that other end, whoever is talking. And the radio lets you there's an intimacy of radio that the other media do not have. I think radio is truly unique in that regard.
Dan, we're talking with Dan Verbeck, a long time, 4 decades, Kansas City area radio reporter. Do you have questions for Dan Verbeck of KCUR, stories from his reporting? You can join our conversation and our retrospective by calling 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. Or you can email us at centralstandard@kcur.org or tweet us. Our handle is KCURCST. Now, we have another clip here, Dan, that's from another one of Kansas City's saddest moments. It was in November of 1988 when a group of firefighters came on the scene of a fire at a highway construction project. Set the scene for us for this one, too, please.
Monroe, there was a call came out for a fire at a construction site, a trailer at a construction site of 87th Street and 71 Highway, if you will. And the fire crews went out there, and it was the trailers were packed with ammonium nitrate, which is used as well since the Oklahoma City bombing. Everybody knows what it does, but it intensifies the impact of dynamite and. Those couple of trailers blew up, and I think it was two separate explosions, and there were two fire crews on the scene and a battalion chief, and it killed the six firefighters, and the battalion chief survived. I've seen him in years since, Marion Gurman, and he took it very personally that his guys died and he lived.
Let's go to your report now from November of 1988.
Fighters went up some time ago to check to see if there were any survivors, and I understand they have come back and said there are none at the scene, and so then six firefighters are dead.
Harold Kanabi of the fire department was shaken, as were many others.
We did find all firefighters, and unfortunately, they were all dead.
The pair of blasts that November morning were felt 40 miles away. The first, along the Bruce Watkins Freeway construction site, killed the crew of Pupper 41, James Kilventon, Robert McCarnan, Michael Oldham, and firefighters on Pupper 30, Captain Gerald Halloran, firefighters Thomas Fry and Luther Hurd.
That's Dan Verbeck reporting on the aftermath of the explosion November 29th, 1988, on a construction project along U.S. 71 that killed six Kansas City firefighters. We have a caller here. We have Mike from South Kansas City. Mike, good morning, and welcome to Central Standard.
Thank you. I hate to use his term after you mentioned the thing about the firefighter, but my question is, how are you going to quit chasing the fire truck?
Mike, I kind of quit chasing fire trucks about the time I came to KCUR. The style of news here is a little bit different than what I'd done. So it was kind of I made a sea change coming here. The stories are a different type of story. The adrenaline, though, is there, Mike. As you probably know, I think you may be in that line of work. The adrenaline always pumps.
My brother was. Let me just mention one other thing. Were you friends with Charles Gray?
I am friends with Charles Gray. A great man. A great reporter.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Mike.
Yeah, Mike, thank you very much. You're a notoriously early riser, at least used to be, Dan, to do your radio reporting. That explosion on November of 1988, how did you learn about it?
You know, honestly, I can't remember. I think I might have gotten a call from somebody at work that I was still at home, and they said, you know, go to this place. And so I got in the car and I drove, and I remember hitting a big pothole on 435, somewhere south of the city, and it rocked the car. And I realized later that it was not a pothole, and that it was that second explosion that moved. And it everybody within miles and miles and miles knew that those had happened.
Yeah, those things woke up a lot of Kansas Cityans that day. We have another caller. We have MD from KCMO. MD, welcome to Central Standard.
Thank you so much, and good morning. And thank you, Dan, your guest, who's serving in Kansas City. I'd like to, you know, ask Dan a personal question, how, you know, Dan can remember. When September 11, 2001 happened, I was in Germany, and I was in the service station down there, and it was a, you know, devastation feeling about 9/11 plane hijacking. And after 13 years, 2014, September 6th, we have a plane missing, Malaysian aircraft with 349, something like that, that people. So how do you take Dan as an individual with these two situations when 2001 plane got hijacked and this 2014 the plane been missing?
Well, MD, I think we learn along the way somehow that events are separate, and there may not be any connection. There may be there is a suspicion in the back of any reporter's mind that what is the real story on this? At the immediate moment, you have to go with what you've got, and you can do your digging and investigating on it. When you have time, but if there's an immediate situation right then, you go with what's going on right now. So it's a little bit like apples and oranges, but yeah, you're always a little suspicious, a little skeptical as to am I getting the truth? And that's what reporters are supposed to do. You look into things. Thank you, MD.
Dan Verbeck, how has Kansas City radio news changed in these four decades that you've been covering stories?
Well, the internet came along, and it changed. You know, it was strange because there was a time that, you know, the newspaper, you had to wait for the paper to come out for everybody to know what was there. So radio had to jump on everybody. You could get it out with immediacy and beat the paper. For a long time, beating the Star was not such a big deal because, you know, the Star wasn't going to come out or the Times in the morning. So you had a little time. So the competition was between other radio stations, and there were a lot of them who did a lot of news. I mean, there was a lot of competition. There were probably 8 or 10 stations that were doing some variation of news on their programming. Internet came along, the social media, and now you're down at a story. Well, how am I going to do this first? Is it going on the radio or am I going to tweet it? Should I get this, get a picture of this on Facebook? I tend to lean with, and this may be heretical, I tend to go with radio gets it first. If you're a radio station, by God, you put it on the radio if it's big enough. And that is the philosophy here at KCUR. There is a whole action plan that is so complicated that you should probably sit down and bone up on it every so often because we have this situation merits this response, and it's really well thought out. I mean, it is a divine thing. So, yeah, if it's really big, you break into programming no matter what's on. Now, back on the commercial side, well, they said, you know, we don't really want to break into a commercial announcement because that's revenue. Well, we changed that a few times because it merited getting on right now. So we go with it if it's really big, if it fits the plan. We go with it right now, and it goes on the radio. And other people are. I mean, we've got a big staff here, so we got people who are tweeting it. We got people who are doing the web page so that we cover anybody who wants to hear from us. They're gonna get a variation on it. It's gonna be quasi. I call it quasi print. The internet. It's not real print, but it's the current vogue. I'm a little bit of a Luddite, so you'll have to forgive that I am not really with the current program as far as the value of internet.
For a Luddite, you've got a great voice and a great career at covering the news, Dan Verbeck. We want to thank you. KCUR's Dan Verbeck. He's been a reporter for four decades in Kansas City, and today is his last day at KCUR. You know him for bringing you the news each day, but we here at KCUR have also been the benefactors of his friendship and support. He's helped mentor countless other talent you hear on the air and supplied our stations with smiles and laughs. We'll miss you, Dan. We wish you all the best and can't wait to see you around town or out in our big, wide world. Thank you, Dan, for everything.
Monroe, you've made this whole little venture really worth it. Thank you.
And we'll be back after the break.